I am trusting lawmakers to pass the pay up policy for gig workers because we are not disposable and should not be exploited.
We feel that our input has not properly been considered or included in this legislation, and we do not support the pay up proposal.
Well, there it is, the battle over pay up legislation to give all app workers in the city a minimum wage. That's back in front of the Seattle City Council this week with some freshly delivered pushback from some of the major app companies to consider. Well, we are discussing that, a new way the city could investigate the chief of police when a complaint is filed. Interesting story there. And a potential change to Seattle's Just Cause eviction laws. A veritable potpourri of topics. And you don't even have to wager a daily double at Seattle News, Views, and Brews, your coffee break political podcast. I'm Brian Callinan. I'm a host on Seattle Channel, and the views expressed here are my own. And I'm joined by David Croman, transportation reporter for the Seattle Times. David, as always, great to see you. I've been thinking about this a lot. You out on the Kitsap Peninsula, I read that you actually ran past a bear recently on a morning jog. Did you outwit it with your powers of journalism, or what was the deal there?
Well, actually, I saw it 2 days in a row. I saw
Too.
So it's now apparently a resident of this.
A neighbor. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Fortunately, I wasn't very close to it. I heard it back in the woods and just kind of caught a glimpse of it. Fortunately, walking the other direction. But
okay. Yeah. And then your dog ran off the other direction too. That's really helpful.
Yeah, I know. Which turns out to be a good thing. I learned that a lot of times when bear attacks happen, it's because off-leash dogs lead the bear back to the person. So,
oh, geez. Okay.
Better to have the dog run away from the bear than towards it.
All right. Well, man, I'm glad you're okay. Please stay with me, man. Don't get eaten by a bear. I've never said that advice to anyone, but I hope you take me up on that. Thanks, as always, David, for joining me. Thanks to all of our listeners out there. Thanks to City Grind Espresso, our background noise sponsor for the audio podcast. Please do visit them on the first floor of City Hall. And thanks especially to our patrons. If you listen, folks, it is time to become a supporter of the show. If you would please, we will send you a Seattle News, Views, and Brews coffee mug. That goes to our $10 a month supporters, and you get a special mention on the mugshot of the week. This week, it is Francis with her pet parakeet in the background, I believe. Francis, thanks for giving the show wings. How about that? Everybody else, be cool like Francis. Help out. Support Seattle News, Views, and Brews on Patreon. We are on Converge Media 2. The video of the podcast airs on Converge Wednesday nights at 7. Off we go with right here, right now. Well, it's crunch time for the pay-up legislation in front of Seattle City Council this week. Talking about gig workers here, the Public Safety and Human Services Committee taking a look on Tuesday at this measure, which would guarantee a minimum wage to all the app-based workers out there in Seattle. Tens of thousands of them, 40,000 is what I understand from the city figures here. And David, the big amendments I'm seeing come down the pike on this are from Councilmember Peterson. He's taken up this line of reasoning from the app companies that these management network companies, the MNCs like TaskRabbit or Rover, the dog walkers there with Rover, they shouldn't even be part of this legislation. Now, Councilmember Herbold, who sponsored this and has been working on this for more than a year, would say these companies have been at the table, letting them off the hook, essentially, would turn into a loophole for them so they wouldn't have to pay a minimum wage. What do you make of this battle that's going on right now with regard to gig workers inside the city council?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's part of the complication of legislating the gig economy generally,
which is changing all the time. Yeah,
right. It is at once a sort of shared model, which is the sort of independent contractor, people kind of dropping in and out of the platform. But then at the same time, it's also these companies that do very different things. And so kind of when you distinguish them as gig companies versus when you distinguish them as, say, you know, a taxi company or a food delivery service or a dog walker, I mean, you could kind of, you know, slice this hair in a lot of different ways.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I guess just in looking at this, I'm trying to figure out what happens next with the council on this piece, because I'm not quite sure if it's going to be a situation where we're going to have this fight back and forth, if these MNCs are still going to be part of the legislation or whatever else. But I think a concern for the companies, if the council, I'll just go down this path. Let's say the council were able to pass legislation that did not cover MNCs. Wouldn't you think workers would be incentivized to go towards other companies like DoorDash or whatever else that would have that minimum wage, et cetera?
Yeah, maybe, possibly. I mean, that makes me think of one of the impacts that I've heard from the minimum wage, the Uber and Lyft minimum wage in Seattle, is that drivers don't want to take drives that are going to Bellevue or
going back to Bellevue.
Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I mean, it's again, I mean, part of this whole economy is sort of by nature very fluid and changes a lot. And so, yeah, I mean, I think any sort of regulation could have impacts, you know, both in any sort of direction. You know, some people will see them as positive changes and some people will see them as negative.
Yeah. It's interesting to me, though. I saw that Councilmember Herbold had actually put an open letter in The Stranger, reaching out to DoorDash customers out there saying, hey, I'm a DoorDash customer, too. Make sure you're giving us the positive feedback on PayUp. Not something that is unheard of. Council members have done that before. But were you surprised that she went to those lengths on this?
No, I don't think so. I mean, there's also, you know, I think also some of these pieces of legislation, I mean, require some buy-in from the customers because, you know, one tactic is, and I've been hearing this again from kind of Uber and Lyft the Uber and Lyft representatives or people involved in that world, which is they're gonna blame any kind of price increase on legislation from the Seattle
Council,
and they'll find ways to do it creatively. You know, if you have these apps, a lot of times you actually get messages from them, sort of encouraging you to reach out to your council member. So they're not shy about kind of using leverage to hit back on being regulated. You know, even if the explanations for why the price is going up are not directly tied to the Seattle City Council, you know, they'll make that connection. And so, you know, getting buy-in from the public and basically being like, hey, we're trying to do this thing. Here's why we're doing it. It'd be great if you could back that, even if, you know, you hear from these companies that the cost of your delivery goes up. So, you know, I think it requires public buy-in. People being okay with that.
Yeah. You know, we'll see what happens with that one. I think there's still a few more battles ahead for the council on that. I know Councilmember Herbold had wanted to pass something in the month of May with the full council vote. Not quite sure they're ready for that yet, but we'll keep tabs on that. I did want to mention a few other things moving along to matters regarding the SPD here, that hiring plan with bonuses, et cetera, that we've been talking about on the show. It'll get a full council vote this week. It came out of committee, not unanimously. Expect a no vote from Councilmember Mosqueda at the very least. But there's another issue of police oversight on the Public Safety Committee this week to establish a process for investigating complaints that name the chief of police. And just so you know, folks, Interim Chief Diaz is not involved with this directly here. It's a very interesting piece. We might have touched on this earlier, but it's fascinating to look through this because the city is, as I understand it, and what I've heard from Councilmember Herbold on this, it really doesn't have a good system set up when complaints come in specifically naming the chief of police. The mayor's office is in on this, too. The office there working on this legislation, presenting it to the city council this week. And they're trying to answer some big questions with this legislation, like what's up with the investigation of using tear gas in 2020 after the city council set a ban on that? What about the misinformation, the ruse used by police that the Proud Boys were coming to scare off some of the protesters there? Why did the chief lie about a dispatch error regarding that ruse here? Some really heavy stuff here, David. What do you make of this legislation here with the idea of trying to investigate the chief with some more civilian oversight?
I think you kind of hit it on the head, which is really the last 2 years happened, and specifically 2020. I mean, there was a lot of questions regarding Carmen Best specifically, you mentioned the ruse and but then there's also the text messages of hers that went missing. A lot of people wanting answers to that. There was, you know, for better part of a year, people were wondering how the decision to abandon the East Precinct came about. There was, we have some examples of, there's sort of chain of command questions. Like initially the officer who grabbed, you know, the pink umbrella incident.
Yes, right. Who made initially the call to do that? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, someone had this pink umbrella, an officer grabbed it. That kind of set off this whole little kerfuffle that then blew up into something much bigger than it probably needed to be. And so then originally, you know, the kind of frontline person was recommended for discipline, but then the chief sort of moved that to the supervisor of that person for giving the order. And then the supervisor of that person then I think sued actually as a result. And I think named chief, the chief at the time, you know, so it's this really kind of thorny thing around like if there is misconduct, like does the fault lay to the person who carried it out or the person who gave the order or the boss of the person who gave the order? And so I think you know, opening up more lines of inquiry into the bosses, especially the chief, who's not part of any union or, it doesn't have any, isn't subject to any kind of OPA necessarily is, it's a, I'm sure that it's a reaction to a lot of that.
Agreed. And I think it'll be interesting to see how this plays out, because in this legislation, it's actually laid out specifically that the mayor wants it implemented as soon as possible. But he also says, well, there's likely some sort of involvement that needs to happen with the police unions just to make sure that it, because they're in the middle of a bargaining process right now. They don't haven't had a contract for more than a year, as you know. And I'm interested to see what police unions would say about this, because I think it does speak to the chains of command, how much the mayor's office or the city council have control over that. And I would have to think there's going to be some pushback from police unions on this one, don't you think?
Yeah, I don't know. That's hard for me to read. I mean, because it's not like the police unions and the police chief always have a great relationship either.
This is true. Yeah,
that can be a tense relationship because the police chief is management, the union is labor, and that is an inherently combative relationship. And so, who knows? I have no idea. Who knows? Maybe the police union decides they actually like this because I don't know.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see that one play out, too. But a lot still ahead for the SPD, and we'll see what the mayor's office and the council come up with there with regard to that legislation there. All right. Well, up next, got a lot more to bring you here, including more fallout from the sweep of encampments at Woodland Park. We're going to talk about that aftermath on Now Hear This. Well, the city of Seattle, and the mayor especially, very much trying to change the narrative when it comes to sweeps of homeless encampments in the city. So Mayor Harrell had a press conference last week at Woodland Park. A few other people joined him. He touted it was the largest number of people connected with shelter and housing during an encampment clearing in the city's history. So definitely something to shout about there in terms of what he was saying. But the mayor actually, with this, in his press conference, would rather not call this whole process even a sweep after 4 months of outreach and services at the park. Here's what he said.
Today is not a victory lap. It's far from it. What it is it's a narrative that this is the Seattle we will build, leading with compassion, housing people, getting them the treatment.
Well, just leaning once again on some reporting from Publicola for some follow-up and perspective here. The plan was to have a by-name list for everyone at the park, but that didn't pan out completely. About half the people removed from the encampment at Woodland Park did not end up on that list. And David, I'm just bringing this up again because it seems like the city is so intent on changing the viewpoint about what happened at Woodland Park there. A sweep has always been a sensitive term, I know, but what are you supposed to call it when tents and camps are all taken down? I guess, what do you make of what the mayor is saying and this press conference that was at Woodland Park last week?
Yeah, it's interesting. And it's actually, to me, it signals he's kind of taking up the language of, I would say specifically LEAD, formerly Law Enforcement Assisted Diversion Program. I can't remember exactly their acronym now.
There's a new acronym for it now.
It's still LEAD. But
with dignity. Dignity is the last part. They're trying to lead people out of lives of criminal behavior and get them into a place of dignity. But keep going.
Right. Yeah. And this kind of related program, Just Care, which is sort of part of the same umbrella organization or was, but that for a long time has been kind of a progressive, progressive community has really appreciated and supported that program. I remember there was an operation down in Pioneer Square. There were a lot of tents down there. And it was sort of a similar approach. They spent a long time talking to folks and sort of in this case, getting them into a empty hotel because it was during the pandemic. And I remember once kind of sort of calling it a sweep offhandedly just because it was something I was used to. And they reacted pretty strongly to it, saying, no, this is not a sweep. Sort of exactly the same as you're hearing from Mayor Harrell right now. It's sort of trying to distinguish between these sort of protracted long operations of trying to get people into housing versus what I think... If you're accepting the term sweep, the kind of more controversial, clearing off sidewalks without notice which are things that are really happening all the time, but maybe don't get as much press. It's interesting. And I think it's probably going to catch on a little bit more because you do see a little broader buy-in with this, because I think there's some recognition that City Hall needs to be shown to be doing something
yes.
with mm-hmm. some of these large homeless encampments.
Yeah.
And also maybe a recognition that just clearing these folks out without kind of a backup plan, which I think is how people, a lot of people would define sweeps.
Yeah.
Is both, has both become a very time consuming debate in City Hall. Mm-hmm. And is, you know, I think there's a lot of recognition that it's frankly not that effective because folks just kind of move, end up somewhere else. And so
right.
I think the kind of trying to redefine the quote sweep is a sign of what we've been seeing a lot this year. And I think since Mayor Harrell took office in particular is mm-hmm. actually, I would say some movement kind of towards maybe not like the most extreme left or right, but
sure.
folks on the
trying
left
to find that middle ground. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. A little closer together on a strategy mm-hmm. around this. Whether it's scalable, of course, is the biggest question because there's still limited shelter and you know, we frankly don't know how well this has worked yet because we'll know it worked if people don't show up again somewhere else. So, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. There's a lot going on in just his insistence that this is not a sweep.
Right, right. And it's interesting to me, you bring up that piece about shelter space. I think what made this work, at least in the mayor's mind, and in terms of just from a pragmatic standpoint, there actually were some spaces that were set aside specifically for this encampment. So I think that's something that the mayor was looking at. The city council has been talking about this a lot, too. A lot of the people who left this camp and went into other options ended up going into tiny house villages. So I think that's going to be something that we'll see more of going forward. But I did want to touch on one more piece here, David, because it was reported in the Seattle Times with the mayor's office later on this month. Of course, he made this big promise that he's going to have 1,000 new shelter beds by 6 months into his term. He's working on that. Looks like that's he's headed in that direction. But then he's also trying to provide a transparent look at what the city's doing with homelessness with a website of some sort, saying, here's where the resources are going. Here's how many people are housed or whatever else. He actually said that'd be up very soon by the end of this month in May. I'm trying to figure out if that's possible and what that would even look like. Do you have any concept of that?
No, I don't. I don't have any concept of that. And I mean, it's you know, it's more than just a dashboard.
In
theory, the dashboard has to say something.
Represent
a plan for homelessness. So no, I mean, I think I do think he's still a little bit in the honeymoon period. I mean, he's past 100 days, but still, you know, I think he hasn't quite faced, at least I have seen, the kind of sort of, you know, intense pressure to show that there's progress being made. But that'll disappear pretty quickly.
Right.
You know, especially definitely by the end of year one, the public is going to have some expectation that there is a long-term plan.
Right.
And so, you know, I think there's some patience around that right now, but he'll find that runs out pretty quickly, I would imagine.
Agreed. And then I keep thinking, too, of the King County Regional Homelessness Authority, who's working very closely with the city on places like Woodland Park. And that group saying, well, it's going to be an effective zero in terms of homelessness downtown by about this time next year. I mean, they made that promise in February of this year, and they said it would take about 12 months or less. I'm really interested to see how that pans out and how the city supports the KCRHA or not in the months ahead. But you're right, I think the honeymoon is going to be very short, and we'll see what both of those agencies, the mayor's office as well as the RHA, does in the months ahead. All right, I did want to talk about another issue that is facing the council this week, the full council actually voting on this, tweaking the council's Just Cause eviction rules. This, sponsored by Councilmember Sawant, has the support of Councilmember Lewis, but a no vote coming out of committee from Council President Juarez and an abstention from Councilmember Nelson. And here's one possible reason why, folks. It's incredibly confusing from a legal standpoint. I'm going to try to give you some background here. So March 21st, a case in front of the Court of Appeals. The bench ruled that the so-called six-month defense set up by the city violates the Constitution because it doesn't let landlords verify what tenants are claiming in these cases, that they have a financial hardship. That six-month defense basically says for 6 months after the end of the eviction moratorium, which happened back at the start of March, tenants self-verify their financial hardship and can be protected from eviction in that way. So stay with me here, folks. You got a new measure from Councilmember Sawant trying to tweak some of the language of the city laws while the city continues to appeal this case in the courts. David, I tried to make heads or tails of this. It just seems like another lawsuit waiting to happen for the city of Seattle with this. Any thoughts about this just cause eviction laws?
No, I mean, not exactly, not from a legal standpoint, because you're right. Yeah. It's confusing. You know, we've seen the city kind of take this approach in the past. There was the initiative around hotel workers that got struck down in the court.
Yes.
They went back to the legislative process and tweaked it. And, of course, it then ended up back in court again. I think it ended up prevailing. I don't actually know.
It has. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I don't know if that path will repeat itself. The thing to me that I would be interested to know more about, and if I was still kind of closely following the stuff, would probably do some reporting on, is what is the sort of advice and what is the reaction right now from the city attorney's office? Because, you know, and we'll probably never know that, because all of this is very tightly protected under attorney-client privilege, and they talk about all the stuff in executive session. But, you know, this is the kind of first real test that, and this came up on the campaign, of what kind of advice is Ann Davison going to give to Kshama Sawant? You know,
good luck with that.
We have somebody who ran as a Republican for lieutenant governor, and a you know, Trotskyist, you know, somebody who's a socialist in the most literal term.
Agreed.
And so that to me is a really interesting dynamic, which is the sort of response to this. Under normal circumstances, you would think you'd work in close collaboration with the city attorney's office to kind of figure out, all right, what's the best way we can make this kind of bulletproof. But, you know, we know that Ann Davidson has expressed skepticism about legislation like this, which is
agreed. Yeah.
You know, landlord groups kind of hate it.
They were the ones who brought the suit. Yeah.
Right. Exactly. So that's an interesting dynamic to me. I don't have any insight into what's going on there, but I do find it interesting.
No, it will be. And David, I just wanted to put this one on your radar, just looking ahead at the 72-hour rule there that is going to be enforced now when it comes to RVs that are parking in one place, and how that intersects with the homelessness issue, whatever else. That's going to be a big one, because the mayor says he's going to be really enforcing that going forward here. And I wonder about some of these different changes that are going to be happening at the city level when we talk about homelessness, when we talk about eviction and all these other issues as well. So we're going to keep an eye on that. But up next, we're going to talk about the story behind a continuing crisis of traffic deaths in Seattle. And what are city leaders doing about it? Well, it's coming up on Transportation Talk. David, another front page story for you in the Seattle Times recently on traffic deaths in Seattle, an alarming trend really in progress right now. Can you tell us what's happening?
Well, I mean, we've known that the last couple of years have been really bad for traffic deaths across the country for a lot of reasons. And Washington State and Seattle really haven't been exceptions to that. The fortunate side is Seattle, compared to some of its kind of sister cities, you can say, like Portland or Austin, actually has fewer deaths. After a year that was, I think, the highest since 2006 of number of deaths in Seattle, we're already outpacing that. There are 10 people have died on the roads this year. There are eight people had died at this point last year. And you know, I think people really started talking about this more because there was a cyclist, his name was Gonhao Lee, who was hit and killed in Soto a couple weeks ago. And, you know, Soto in particular, in the industrial district, is notoriously unsafe. Basically, as far as you can go back with the data, it's the least safe neighborhood in Seattle for people, especially for people walking and biking. And so I think there's more pressure on the city to kind of show that they're working on this. Councilmember Morales has really started to take this up in a way that she probably hadn't before, of saying, you know, I mean, you know, there's the famous Seattle process, what people joke about, but she's now making the argument that process is actually kind of killing people, that there are projects in Soto, like for protected bike lanes, that are not moving forward as quickly as she'd like. And therefore, she's, you know, pushing hard to actually move it forward, and pointing to this most recent death as a reason why.
And we will see what happens there. She's talking a lot about Vision Zero. She's talking about a lot of the programs and trying to hold a few more council members' feet to the fire here. But David, I'm sorry, we need to wrap up the show here. And I wanted to make sure I asked you one question as we were flirting with 70 degrees here in Seattle over the past couple of days here. Did those tomatoes actually get in the ground? What can you tell me? What's the report? What do we got?
The tomatoes are in the ground, so are the peppers.
Nice. Nice.
As of yesterday, they're still protected under a little plastic cover, so
okay.
They'll have a little more resilience. But so far, everything is looking pretty good.
Okay, good. All right, we're going to get the garden update with David as often as we can throughout the summer here. I can't wait to hear more about that. David, thank you, as always, for joining me here. And thank you to all of our listeners out there to Seattle News, Views, and Brews, where you can always find out what's brewing in local politics. This podcast is on all the major platforms. And once again, if you are a listener, please do support the show on Patreon. Greatly, greatly appreciated. Thanks for watching on Converge Media 2. We will see you next time. Seattle News, Views, and Brews is an independent production of Calaman Media Services. Copyright 2022.